The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Mill Spouse Matters, the podcast dedicated to encouraging military spouses. I'm your host, Jen McDonald, and I was a military spouse for nearly 30 years until my husband's retirement. I'm now the mom of four young adults, including one active duty son. I also wrote the book, You Are Not Alone, Encouragement for the Heart of a Military Spouse. Through my experiences, I came to believe that we're only stronger together. Whatever life is throwing your way as a military spouse, let's talk about it. So hello and welcome to episode 59. This is Jen, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. Whether you're a new listener or you've been listening for a while, I'm so glad you're here with me. Just a reminder, you can always find the complete show archive at millspousematters.com. Just click the podcast tab and you can find the whole library of past episodes, show notes, and resources, along with buttons to subscribe in whatever podcast player you're using. If you haven't already, I would love it if you'd subscribe, share the podcast, and leave a 5-star review. So if you're listening to this around Valentine's Day, I wanted to be sure to mention our episode from last year around this time, episode 33. It's called Military Love Stories, The Way We Met, and it is a roundup of stories from different spouses from all the different branches of service, Navy, Army, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, and it is some newer spouses and some more experienced spouses, and they just shared their love stories, how they met, and even some really great relationship advice. So please go check that one out because I think you might really enjoy it. And I will share the link and I'll probably be sharing it on social media here. What's coming? Speaking of roundup of spouses, I'll tell you a little bit about today's episode in just a minute. I also will be joined by the ladies from the Spouse Angle podcast in a couple of weeks. And then I'm going to be doing a roundup of tips for new military spouses, as well as I would like to hear from new military spouses and what you wish the older spouses knew about you, what kind of support you could use, or what you just wish, maybe some misconceptions they have about you. If you are wanting to contribute to either of those, so the first one will be from spouses who've been in, like what you wish you had known as a new military spouse, or maybe your best advice for a military spouse. Or if you're a new military spouse and you want to share what you wish older spouses understood, please send me a voice memo. So you can do this a couple of ways. I have a Google Voice account. You can call at any hour. You won't disturb me because it just goes straight to the voicemail. And that number is 757-509-7241. Again, 757-509-7241. That is a Google Voice account. So you just call it. It'll say something like connecting you to Google Voice. It'll come on with my message. So if you use that, basically just say your name. You can use just your first name and whether you're a new or more experienced spouse, and then leave your tip. So if you run into issues, just kind of pause and start over. You can also record a voice memo on your phone and send it to me via message on Instagram at MillSpouseMatters. And I believe there's also an option in Messenger there to just send a voice memo, and you can do that as well. So I really look forward to hearing from you and all your tips or questions, anything you'd like to contribute, and you might hear it in one of those episodes coming up this spring. Some of the questions I've also been getting lately have been to do with this whole thing with COVID, of being restricted with travel. I've heard from a couple of spouses that are living overseas for the first time, you know, are facing some challenges with COVID, either just kind of feeling stuck or having family issues back in the States and they can't get back. So if you have any tips for that or any thoughts about that, please also reach out to me. You can either send it the way I just mentioned or just send me a message on Instagram or You can send me an email through my site at millspousematters.com. So I wanted to start sharing with you guys some of my favorite things that I just either recommend or come across, or somebody reaches out to me and has a resource that I think might be something you would enjoy. So I thought I would share a few of those with you today. So these are just a few of my favorite things right now. So the first one is a book. It's a little picture book called I Miss You Most, and it is by author Cassie Hoyt and illustrated by Stephanie St. Dennis. And it explores the heartache of missing loved ones in a creative way. The author wrote it when her three-year-old was having difficulty understanding why he couldn't see his grandparents, aunts, and uncles who lived 10 hours away. Since then, the theme of the book has become even more relevant during social distancing. If you're a military parent, you know that there are always children that are missing their loved ones, whether it's through deployment or relocation. There's other scenarios where they're away from one parent. So I Miss You Most is an adorable picture book that helps kids through the heartache of missing loved ones by reminding them that love knows no distance. So it's written for kids. It's super cute. And the author has also more information about her books, reviews, and also some free downloadable activity sheets at her site. And they're for kids, obviously. And it's CassieHoyt.com. So CassieHoyt.com. And I'll be doing a review and some photos of this pretty soon on my website. And then, but I'll also put the links if you are interested in this book. I would say it's for like 3 to 6, maybe a little older. It'd be a good book to read together. So if you remember back on episode 55, I spoke with Amy Palmer, who is the president of Soldiers Angels. Well, I think a lot of us are feeling kind of stuck. Things that we might normally help out with or volunteer, or those of us that we need to be around people or we need to feel like we're doing something to help. It's been a rough year for that, hasn't it? So a lot of companies are going to virtual scenarios, and Soldiers Angels, which is a nonprofit, is doing the same thing. So they have virtual volunteer opportunities. So you can become a virtual volunteer. They have what they call Team Angels all around the world that provide support for deployed service members, military families, veterans, wounded heroes. You could sign up to send care packages, cards, letters. There are handcrafted items for hospitalized veterans or new military babies. And all of these Team Angel opportunities are completely virtual. There's a whole little form you have to fill out. I just did it this week to sign up to be part of the team that sends cards, because I just think, you know, that's something fairly easy I can do from home. So learn more about this virtual volunteer opportunity. There's, like I said, there's all different kinds of things you can do at soldiersangels.org/programs. And then the last thing I wanted to mention for my favorite things is a virtual military ball fundraiser. So we know that military balls are not happening right now, probably not anytime soon. So this is from the Veteran Spouse Project. And what the Veteran Spouse Project does, it is another nonprofit that gives voice to the experiences of military spouses through theater and expressive arts. So here's a little bit about this virtual ball that will be coming on February 25th. So pretty soon, right around the corner. So if you're interested, be sure to take a look. So we all know that we love traditions in the military community. It's how we remember and honor the lineage of our units, our brothers and sisters in arms, and the fallen. One of the most beloved traditions is the military ball. So usually this has been reserved for those in uniform and their spouses and special guests. But our civilian friends, this is from the Veteran Spouse Project, have always been enamored by the elusive military ball. Aligning with the Veteran Spouse Project mission of building bridges between civilian and military communities, and inspired by the ways they've seen individuals and groups adapt during COVID, it feels like the perfect time to draw back the curtain and bring us all together under one virtual roof. So, like I mentioned, on February 25th, the Veteran Spouse Project is hosting the first ever virtual military ball fundraiser, the Honoring All Military Ball. The guest speaker will be Deanie Dempsey, who is the spouse of the 18th Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey. Excerpts from the original play, I Will Wait, and a nod to the traditions that tie the military community together. With your access to the event, you will receive a table for two interactive ball box with wine tumblers, items to create your own fallen soldier table, and other surprises. You can find out more at veteransspouseproject.org, and I will share all the links to these that are my favorite things for this week. I did want to mention that from last episode, just a reminder, Ashley Keller from Glow Body PT on episode 58 has a special offer of 10% off of one of her 10-minute plans or the 12-week post-pregnancy plan. So she is a personal trainer exercise specialist. So you can get 10% off of these with the code MILSPOUSE10, MILSPOUSE10 at Glow Body PT. So just a reminder, if you haven't done that yet, please take advantage of that. So on to today's episode, I am talking to Stephanie Montague from the website Pop and Smoke. And it's just a lot of fun. We are talking about Space A, which if you don't know what that is, that's space available travel, where you can take a flight on an AMC flight and certain bases you can hop on. How are you eligible for it? Like, how do you sign up for it? Some tips for travel. She's talking about living and traveling overseas and what she and her husband did after he retired from the military versus just going straight into another job, what they have done instead. He retired from the Army in 2015, and they've been traveling and living abroad basically ever since then, including 2.5 years in Japan. And as of this past December, they obtained a residence visa and moved to Rota, Spain. So she is just a wealth of information about space age travel, travel in general, and living and traveling overseas. And I really think you're going to enjoy it. I will also link to the AMC update. They had been restricting travel, and I believe there are still some restrictions on Space A, but I don't even want to tell you what they are because it's probably subject to change. To get the latest information, you need to go ahead and check with the AMC Air Mobility Command site, which I will link to. It's amc.af.mil. So I really hope you enjoy this episode, and thanks for listening. Let's get into our talk with Stephanie. So hi, everybody, and welcome. Today, I am so excited to be talking to Stephanie Montague. Stephanie is the founder of the military travel website Poppin' Smoke. She helps members of our community make the most of their travel-related benefits and their life after the military. She and her husband have been traveling and living abroad, including 2.5 years in Japan, since his retirement from the Army in 2015. They've taken advantage of space age travel and used military recreation facilities all over the world. Stephanie wants her readers to see that travel doesn't have to be expensive and that having a second career is not the only option after military retirement. You can find out more from Stephanie at poppinsmoke.com, on Facebook as poppinsmoke site, and on Instagram as poppinsmoke_military travel. And of course, we will link to all of that in the show notes as always. And full disclosure, I do get a little FOMO sometimes at all of your travel photos and your pictures of yummy food. So welcome, Stephanie, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jen. I'm really happy to be here. I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. So I usually like to start off by asking for you to share a little bit about your background as a military spouse. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you met your spouse?
Well, wow. So my husband and I met in Washington, D.C. in a salsa dancing class, actually, the Washington, D.C. area. That was long before we actually started dating. And then we had sort of a long and storied history before we finally got married. But we got married in 2011, mm-hmm. and he retired in 2015 out of the Pentagon. So he served 30 years in the Army.
Oh, wow.
That was plenty.
Yeah. Yeah. So you met him at the end of his career. And did you have any idea about military life at all?
I didn't. I lived in DC, and that was, you know, when you're in DC, there's so much military, you know, everyone right. has some affiliation one way or another. But no, I didn't really know much about military life until I met him. And of course, I started to learn a lot about it before we got married and did some travel. Like, for example, he always liked to go down to there's some beach cabins in the Virginia Beach area that run a military mm-hmm. base. So I started to get a little bit of exposure to some of those things.
Oh, that's really cool. I didn't realize you were from DC. I love DC. So we were only stationed there for a year, but there's, I mean, every weekend you just go, what are we going to do this weekend? You know, yeah. There's always something to do.
Yes. And I lived there for 12 years and I do miss it.
Yeah. We just went there in December before COVID and had a great time last December. But I remember when we were stationed there, I made a comment about it not being like a typical military town. And my husband said, it's not a like you can't think of it as a military town. It's DC. Yeah. I was like, that's the difference, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and so you guys didn't really take what would be considered the typical approach to retirement after the military. And so I'm really excited to hear more about how you guys, you and your husband, came to the decision to just travel post-military retirement. Was that something you did right away, or did you sort of ease into it, or tell us how that came about?
We did it right away, and it was only supposed to be a year. So we kind of started thinking about it several years before he retired. We thought about the concept of a gap year, and we watched many, many episodes of House Hunters International. I have to say that was a big inspiration. You know, you would see these gorgeous homes for like a fraction of what we were paying in our rent in Arlington, Virginia. And, you know, even episodes where someone did kind of what we ultimately did, where was they could work remotely. So they said, we're moving to the lake region of Italy. We're going to rent an apartment with a beautiful view. It's, I don't know, $1,500 a month. And we'll work from there, but enjoy this beautiful setting and travel around Europe. So we were kind of thinking, why can't we do that? Yeah. And, you know, as we looked toward his retirement, everything was kind of lined up. We didn't have any small kids in the house. We did not have any debt. We knew we'd have his military pension plus TRICARE, the free year of household goods storage, which we can talk about more later if you're not familiar with that benefit. And then, you know, I was kind of looking for a new job at that point. And it seemed like everything lined up. And the bigger question was, why not? You know, the only thing that we hadn't worked out was what we would do at the end of the year. You know, neither of us would have jobs. We'd be coming back from travel, but we just kind of figured we would deal with that. And even if it was kind of a rough landing, it would still be worth that experience. And, you know, because there's only so many things the universe is going to line up for you at once. So you kind of have to just take a risk sometimes. So as it turned out, we continued traveling. We didn't, after 1 year, my husband actually wanted to study Japanese. That's his mother's native language. And so we went to Japan so he could do an intensive language study, stayed there 6 months and kept extending and so on.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it's not something I would have considered straight out of our house in Arlington. Like if he'd proposed, hey, let's move to Japan, it would have been pretty crazy. But since we were just coming off a year of travel and being so light on our feet, we just kind of figured why not. And then we quickly realized that even though we had planned to just come back to the U.S. and have the, you know, get jobs and go back to regular life, it was actually much cheaper to be traveling or living abroad in many cases, since we had kind of cut off all the, we didn't have any financial obligations in the U.S. anymore. And we realized my husband doesn't need to have a second career. I'm building my own business online. But it was pretty eye-opening getting out there and traveling and seeing that.
Okay, I'm not going to be able to let my husband listen to this episode. We were talking a little bit before we started recording, and something he's done is said, you know, if we didn't have a house payment, car payments, this is how much, you know, we would have to spend on travel, or if we RV'd, or if we, like what you guys did. And I kind of keep going, well, I don't know if that's realistic. And well, it sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's funny because this was my dream more so. My husband, like I said, he was in 30 years. His dad was in 30 years. So he kind of had enough travel. And he probably would have been happy, you know, we probably would have stayed in the DC area. He likes to golf. There's great golfing there. He would tinker with his motorcycle and, you know, get some kind of job. He didn't want to manage people anymore. But he was willing to do it just because it was my dream. But then, he's definitely on board now. And we're both really glad we did it.
So I have two questions then. Number one would be, do you guys have a home base where you keep things or have a home, or do you kind of, you know, how does that work if you are not currently traveling, or do you just travel all the time?
We have had home bases. Like we ended up living in Japan for 2.5 years. All of our household goods were in storage from when he retired. So the movers mm-hmm. came May 1st, 2015, and they picked everything up just like they would for a PCS move, and they put it in storage. So we had our first year of household goods storage free, because that's mm-hmm. an entitlement through the military with if you've received permission. And then after that, we just kept extending the storage. Mm-hmm. We had to get permission annually. And we were just kind of kicking that can down the road because we knew that we'd had a 3-bedroom townhouse in Arlington, and we'd mm-hmm. need to receive that those good household goods. We would need to rent a whole big house again. And then we decided we wanted to sell everything because after a few years, we couldn't even remember most of what was there. So
and then you realize you probably don't need it so much, right? Well, if you can live for 3 years without it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So we, you know, meanwhile, we did have a home base in Japan for 2.5 years. And that was part of the reason we left Japan, because we said we need to deal with these household goods. I mean, we were paying a monthly storage fee, mm-hmm. which was kind of a government rate, but by no means pocket change. So
right.
we just needed to deal with it. And long story short, we finally did deal with it this year. We had our household goods delivered to an estate sale company here in the Washington state area. Mm-hmm. And we took what we wanted, and then they will sell everything else on an estate sale.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, we do. We do want to have another home base. And we're actually applying for a visa to live in Rota, Spain.
So, oh gosh. Wow. Yeah,
this year has made that a little bit slow.
Yes, definitely. Well, and I want to talk about Space A and all of that in just a moment. But my other question from kind of your intro was, you know, that first year of travel, I don't know if it's too many to list, but where did you go first? And like, where did you all travel that first year? And like, how did you just jump into that? I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to wrap my brain is like, this is where we're going to go. We're going to go to.
We had actually planned very little. We knew we were going to do a road trip in the U.S. for the first, like for the summer, for the first 3-ish months. We did that. Then we came back, stored the cars, and we took off and flew Space A to Europe. And the only plan we made was we wanted to go to Garmisch, Germany. Mm-hmm. And my husband wanted to show me some of his old stomping grounds, the places he was stationed in the Kaiserslautern area.
Had you ever been there before? Was that your first trip over there?
I had been to Europe, but not to not any of the places we went in Germany. I'd only been to, I think, Munich for a weekend or something. Uh-huh. And then we knew we wanted to go to Normandy. I had actually been there a long time ago, but I wanted to go with my husband. So, because he's like the walking history book mm-hmm. everything. So we ended up, we stayed in Europe for the 90 days that you're allowed to stay as an American, just with no visa. So we only went to Germany, France, and Spain. And
only.
We just kind of, we just stayed until we felt like leaving in each place. So when we travel, we always stay in Airbnbs. Uh-huh. And that it saves a lot of money that way. And it's less tiring. You know, you don't feel like you're always eating in restaurants and repacking mm-hmm. your suitcase and so on. So then we came back to the United States. We flew commercial to Ecuador. We stayed in Ecuador, including the Galapagos, for about 2 months. Then we came back. We flew Space A. We stopped in Hawaii, went to a friend's wedding, and continued on to Japan. I was able to meet my husband's relatives for the first time.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, and that was our. Oh, actually, then we wrapped up. We flew Space A all the way back to Spain to wrap up.
Jeez, that's an exciting year. And I don't know if you know Angie Drake. I did a show with her, and yeah, she does the tours in Ecuador. And I don't know where mm-hmm. they are right now, but just Ecuador. Not a lot of people go there. So yeah, she's a lot of the same vibe as you, as far as kind of being open to travel and recreating your life after retirement. It's very cool. So I'll have to link to that episode with her because she was talking about those trips too. Yeah. And I'm assuming with all your traveling, you started to realize the benefits with Space A and, you know, all the base benefits you can get for free or for discounts. And is that why you started writing about it, or were you doing Pop and Smoke before that? Because your site is incredible. It's just full of resources.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. When the first year of travel, I actually didn't write a single sentence. I had no plans to create a travel website at all. But like I said, meanwhile, we were using the free household goods storage. We'd flown Space A all over the world. We'd stayed on military bases around the world. We'd gone scuba diving through their MWR in Okinawa and hiking through you know, their ITT program in Spain and so on. And we just kept hearing from other military folks who were retirees that they didn't know about this stuff, or they just weren't using it. They thought it was too hard, or I'm not even sure what all the hangups were. But I really just wanted to make people in our community aware of all these travel related benefits and explain how to use them, because a lot of them are really underutilized. Mm-hmm. So I also, my original plan was to try to target people who are also approaching retirement or in retirement, because that's the group that in particular retirees often don't realize that they can still use these things. And then the soon to be retired people need to plan in advance, for example, if they're going to do what we did and store their household goods for a year.
Yeah, that's such helpful information. Well, and for listeners who may not understand what space available travel is, maybe have you define that and talk about something you just touched on. What are some of the misconceptions about it? Mm-hmm. I've only flown Space A a couple of times, but I know, you know, they have the priority for boarding and retirees tend to be the lowest priority, et cetera. So I'll just let you explain because you're the expert.
Sure. Yeah. So basically when a military mission has extra space after all the cargo and the space required passengers have been accommodated, any remaining seats can be used by Space A passengers. So the Space A passengers are essentially cargo and the mission is always the priority. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, there is a system of priority within Space A passengers, and retirees are in the lowest group. However, we also have some of the most flexibility because, you know, if you're active duty, you have to worry about your leave forms and your leave dates and so on. Mm-hmm. So retirees, you just have to know what time of year you should and shouldn't travel. So yeah. I think one of the biggest misconceptions about it is that it's really hard to do it. Mm-hmm. So if you understand how it works, it can be incredibly easy. So, you know, one minute you're at Joint Base Andrews, you get on the plane, you go to sleep on the floor, and the next thing you know, you walk out and you're in Germany. You don't wait in long lines at the airport and so on. And, you know, when it works like that, it's fantastic. But it's true, you don't always get a seat. Sometimes the flights are canceled. Many of the same things that happen with commercial flights, actually, except you've already paid for your commercial flight.
Yes.
So I think that's, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions. And also that it's only for retirees, because I've heard active duty folks say that's not something they're going to try to do until retirement. And granted, you might have more flexibility during retirement, but with active duty, you are higher priority. And if you, as long as you understand how it works, you know, what locations have the most flights and where you're most likely to get a seat, we see many active duty travelers and also unaccompanied spouses who take advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in COVID, I'm sure has impacted Space A travel this year in a big way. Can you tell us where it stands now?
Right now, it's still restricted until further notice. So the only folks who can travel Space A, it's basically people on emergency leave, or if you have an exception, a policy memo from an 07 or above. Mm-hmm. So no just regular leisure travel.
So that's been all just put on pause, like the rest of life.
Right. But I will say you can still use military recreational lodging. That's not Space A travel per se, but it's the military has incredible recreation facilities all around the country, and those are open. Some of them were closed for the first part of the year. But there's still many wonderful travel related benefits to use. And I think a lot of people feel more comfortable using those because they feel like there's a limited population that can use them. And then of course, everybody there follows the rules.
Yeah. Well, can you talk about some of the travel-related benefits? Because I think even MWR and places, you know, things like that where you can rent canoes or take trips. I mean, when we were stationed in Germany, now this was through the base, my husband was deployed the second year we were there. And this is, you know, some time ago, but I just knew when he came out of the desert, we would be moving again. And I wanted to travel and go and see and do, but I wasn't necessarily comfortable doing it all on my own. We did so many trips through the base ITT and even through the USO. And I mean, we took trips to Switzerland and Belgium and Rome, and you know, they just, all you have to do is show up and they have it all handled for you. And it was a great way to go see places like Amsterdam or things like that, you know, places like that, that I might not have been comfortable trying to drive to on my own or take a train by myself. You know, they just made it easy. So why don't you share a few of your favorite military travel related benefits?
So everything you mentioned is absolutely right. So every base has, you know, excursions like that generally, or ITT trips. They have things you can rent, like tours, you can day trips. For example, I mentioned we were in Okinawa. We stayed on base at Kadena Air Base. Mm-hmm. And they offer scuba diving classes. We did a scuba diving tour. And they're all at very reasonable prices compared to civilian. Mm-hmm. There are also a lot of military recreational, like, resorts. We stayed at the Nusana Hotel, which is a luxury hotel right in the middle of Tokyo. I think the rate, it depends on your rank, but it's like under $100 a night. And this is an incredible hotel. Yeah. So then the Dragon Hill Lodge, the Halikoa, those are Armed Forces recreation centers, which I think many people are familiar with. But then there's a lot of other recreational facilities that are smaller that not as many people are familiar with. Earlier this summer, for example, we stayed at what's called Pacific Beach, which is on the coast of Washington State. We spent 4th of July there. And it's a simple facility. It's on the Washington coast. It's not quite like Florida or anything. It's not really a swimming beach, but it's beautiful nonetheless. Yeah. And it was not crowded, and we got to see nice fireworks, and it's a beautiful area. But they have much more sort of full scale resorts all over the country. So I have several articles highlighting those, but I think those are underutilized, and those are among our favorites too.
Yeah. So we'll definitely point to all of those great resources, because you've put so much time into it, and I'm always seeing you on Pinterest and, you know, on social media. And I was like, she's really doing a good job of covering it all in very, you know, user-friendly way. So I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I know, you're welcome. Well, and I know that, like, probably don't have this could, you know, you could probably talk about Space A for an hour, but if you could condense, like, your top tips for somebody that possibly hasn't traveled Space A or is looking into it, what would be your top tips?
I would say that two top tips. The first one is just do your research. There's no shortcut to learning how it works. Like I said, it's not hard. It's just that you have to understand how it works. So
you have to follow the process the military has put out.
Exactly. And you'll feel so much more comfortable if you don't just show up and have no idea how it works. Like, everything will seem, you will understand why things are working the way they are. So, for example, I have a kind of an extensive guide called the Quick Start Guide to Military Space Day Flights. If you read that and all the link posts, you'll understand the process. You know, so there's
awesome.
It explains how to sign up. Some Facebook groups to join, because you can also ask questions about specific locations there. There's a lot to know, but again, once you do your research, you'll be well positioned to get a seat and have a successful journey.
Yeah.
And then the other tip I would say is you really have to dress for success. And by that, I mean, you have to know what to wear and what to bring, because if you don't have the right clothing or the right gear, a military cargo flight in particular can be pretty uncomfortable because they're cold. Whereas if you know in advance, I might be on a C-17, and you dress in layers and you bring a inflatable mat to sleep on, it could be the best overseas flight you ever had. So I actually also have a guide to what to wear and what to pack as well.
Oh, that's really good. That reminds me, we took a trip from Guam. We did a Space A flight to Hawaii, and our kids were little, and it was one of those things where we said, well, we're going to do it. Maybe we'll do it. And then my husband was friends with the airfield manager. So we had our bags packed, but we had gone out and didn't make the flight. So we'd come home, and I'd taken a shower, and I was getting out of the shower with my hair in a towel. Mm-hmm. And I get a call from my husband. This is back in like 2003. He goes, can you be at the airfield in 15 minutes? I was like, what? And so we did, and we made it, and I had wet hair. And it was one of those cargo flights. And it was funny to just kind of look around, and you could see the people that were used to doing it. Cause like you said, they were spreading out like bed rolls and mattresses. Mm-hmm. And we had brought some blankets, but we had no idea you could bring all that. My kids thought it was the best thing in the world because you could spread out and have their snacks and their toys. And you know, if you've never flown like that, it is quite an experience, but it was cold.
Yes. Yeah. That same thing. The first time I flew Space A, I was thinking, why does everyone look like they're going camping?
They're going to start a little campfire over there in the corner. So.
Yeah.
It's really an incredible experience. And like you said, I think when you pay a little fee for the, at the time anyway, like for the little lunchbox or something, mm-hmm. that was it.
Yeah.
That was really awesome.
Yeah. It's, you can't beat the price.
No, so. You can't.
Also, sometimes when you get a flight and there's not a lot of competition for seats, you just get right on. That's happened to us many times. Oh. And then, you know, there's not the whole hassle of civilian airports. You know, you still go through security and so on, but there's not so many people. It's not so stressful with someone kind of barking at you about what, you know, putting your stuff on the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
And then you get off the plane and you were in the terminal within minutes. There's no big lines and things mm-hmm. like that.
So it's probably strange for you to go back and forth between the two types of flying. I bet you get used to one or the other.
Yes. Every time I go through a commercial airport, I'm thinking, oh, give me a C-17 anytime.
Really?
I'd much rather have that.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm just wondering for those who might be coming up to military retirement and thinking about a different life like you've chosen, do you have a few stories or experiences that you want to share other than what you've already talked about, either your own or I know you've profiled other people on your site as well that mm-hmm. have taken that leap?
Yeah, I profiled a bunch of people that are doing things a little bit differently post-retirement. So a few recent ones I've done, for example, there was a Navy family who lived on their sailboat for 10 years, starting from when the kids were very little. You know, they PCS with their boat and so on. And then as of last fall, they are traveling full time. The kids are in junior high now, but they basically decided they want to really take advantage of the last few years before the kids go to college and they're all mm-hmm. under one roof, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that's actually a two-part interview. That's a pretty cool story because
that is.
We've just started to follow also on YouTube some other families that do the full-time sailing thing. It's pretty interesting.
That is interesting. It's very alternative. And I feel like we homeschooled our kids, so we always kind of felt alternative. Just, you know, in military life is an alternative lifestyle, you mm-hmm. know. So homeschooling is traveling full-time is definitely, but there's a lot of freedom in it and just seeing the world in such a different way. That's got to be incredible for their family.
I think so. And you know, now the more people realize that they can work remotely and
yes.
they've been forced to learn how to homeschool in some cases.
Yeah.
Now I think that people will actually be better positioned to do things like that. I mean, there's plenty of families who travel the world with kids. You know, mm-hmm. we felt, you know, we were light on our feet because we didn't have small children, but that doesn't mean there aren't families that don't do it with kids and all. So,
yeah. Well, I think people are seeing the possibilities now. We've kind of taken away some of the structures that were always in place that were normal. And yeah, I think you're right. People are seeing what's possible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I also have an interview series that I call the Expat Military Retiree Series.
Oh.
And so it highlights retirees who moved abroad either to take a job, because in some cases, maybe they got a job on a U.S. base overseas, or just to retire fully. And so the one I just published last week was actually with a spouse of an Air Force retiree who mm-hmm. tragically passed away just as they were ready to move to Portugal. They were retiring early in the early 50s, and she made the very difficult decision to just continue on with their dream. And she moved to Portugal, the Algarve region, which is in the south of Portugal. And she's really glad she did. It was, you know, she's it's a really inspirational interview. She has tons of great things to say about Portugal and gives all the details, but she feels made the right decision to keep moving with that.
Oh, I'm looking forward to reading that one. That sounds amazing. Wow. What a story. Wow.
Yeah. Portugal is definitely one of the top retirement destinations these days because it's really beautiful and it's pretty inexpensive and they make it pretty easy for foreign people to get residence.
I have not visited there yet. I might have to put that on my list. Yeah. Well, and speaking of traveling overseas, I know we're kind of getting short on time, but before we start to wrap up, I would love for you to share, since you've traveled so much, there are a lot of younger spouses or even spouses that have been in for a little while who may not have ever been stationed or traveled overseas. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about some tips for getting over some of the common fears and a few things they might want to know before trying, you know, their first overseas trip? And I know mm-hmm. that's a lot to answer, but maybe just like your quick top tips for overseas travel?
Sure. Now, I would say a lot of people do worry about the language barrier. And,
right.
You know, in a lot of places that we commonly travel, you can find some, but there's some kind of tourist infrastructure where you can find a way to communicate, whether it's with really basic English, finger pointing, gesturing, and so on, pointing to the money. But we just find that it's never a problem. Even when we first went to Japan, we couldn't read or speak a word, basically. Yeah. And it's part of the adventure and you just get around. I think, you know, there's a lot of that in the military with many aspects of military life. It's just you figure it out. And so that's part of the fun, but there's never been anything really bad that happened because of the language barrier. So I think that's fear is a little unfounded. I know it sounds scary to go somewhere where you don't speak any of the language, but it's never been an issue for us.
I think I was always afraid of getting lost. And then people tend to be pretty nice.
They do.
A lot of people speak English. And if they hear you trying to me, it's like if they hear you trying to just get by with what, you know, their language is, they are so much more prone to help. But you're right. Like we've traveled a ton. I've never really had an issue. I've never gotten lost. I think my thought was, I'm going to get lost. I'm not going to be able to find like my family again.
Right.
And it's irrational, but you know, you're going into such an unknown situation. I think it's a common fear. And it hasn't happened yet. So
yeah, in Japan, I had people help me who probably didn't speak any English, but I just remember standing in the subway, just staring at the signs, trying to figure out where I was supposed to go. And I obviously looked lost. And someone, took me down into the station to the platform and put me on the train.
Oh, how nice.
And I didn't, at first I was thinking that was where she was going too, but actually then when the train came, she waved me off. So I couldn't believe she'd gone to that much trouble, but
I think and put you on the right train. How nice.
So you just encounter that kind of kindness from strangers. So,
And
the other thing I would think people worry about sometimes is medical care.
Yes.
It's first and foremost, it's much cheaper overseas. So if you have to seek medical care and pay for it, then you're not going to break the bank, generally speaking. So, if you're using, it's a little bit different when you're active duty, getting care on a base, but if you're just traveling, whether you're active duty or retired, you can use TRICARE overseas. As long as you're enrolled in TRICARE, you don't need to specifically enroll in TRICARE overseas. Mm-hmm. I have a very thorough post about using TRICARE overseas, which was actually written by a guest contributor that pretty much has everything you need to know. But the bottom line is, you can always seek care and get reimbursement from TRICARE, and paying out of pocket, probably isn't going to break you.
Yeah. My daughter just went to, you will love this trip, Stephanie. She and her friend did cheap flights to Norway, all over Norway. And then they went to England, and then they went to Ireland it was right before COVID hit, to go to the All Irelands because she's an Irish dancer, which that have listened to me for a while know that. They're like, we know. But she's 22. She was 21 then, but they did this trip and she left and she wasn't feeling well. Well, come to find out, she had strep throat and mono and was miserable. And so by the time they'd gone and gotten a few things from like the pharmacy, by the time she got to, I believe it was Belfast, because it was, it's the part that's under the UK, she went to the clinic there.
Yeah.
And she was just like, TRICARE is our secondary insurance since my husband's retired. But all that to say, they saw her and she just showed up at the clinic because the pharmacy had told her to go over there. And they're like, we don't really see people without an appointment and you're not really covered, but we're going to go ahead and look at you.
Right.
Because they didn't really have an ER or like a walk-in clinic like we do, like an urgent care.
Right.
All they had was, so all that to say was she's calling me and texting me. It's like, I don't know what to tell you. This is out of my realm of experience. I don't know. Just smile and be sweet. And so the doctor saw her, wrote her a prescription that she just had to pay for the meds, which wasn't bad. And she just looked at her and she goes, I don't even know how to bill you. Don't worry about it.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a new one. We don't get that here.
So Anna said, you might get this really big bill. That is a bit, so she just, I think it's like always asking questions and just letting them know you're kind of at their mercy. Mm-hmm. People tend to be pretty kind. Like you're not trying to take advantage. You just want help. And it's worked out well for us so far, but
yeah. I think so. Yeah. If you just kind of go in with it and be humble, I guess you could say.
Then. Yes. I'm sure you have more tips. So I'm sorry to interrupt that long story, but go ahead.
You know, no, the last one, I guess, would be that people think that travel has to be expensive. And that's also not the case. As I think I mentioned earlier, we stay primarily after we, if we take a space safe flight, we might, you know, stay on base for a day or two to get our bearings. But then we always go off base and stay in an Airbnb. Mm. And that's a much better value than staying in a hotel, particularly when you want a little bit more space. Mm. And, you know, we usually stay for, you get better rates if you're staying for, say, a week or more. But then we prepare meals at home, we shop at local markets and things like that. So that's also a great way to get a more local feel, you know, rather than just the tourist experience. But we found that travel just doesn't have to be that expensive, you know, as long as you don't immediately look to the American style hotels and things like that, you have to be open to other options.
Well, and it sounds like you guys definitely have the travel bug.
Yes.
And that you're making the most out of it because you're really immersing yourselves in the local culture. You're not, like you said, you're not just staying on the base, which is a great resource if you need to run and go to the commissary, or whatever. I'm sure that's very helpful. But, you know, like you said, it's fun to go see all the local shops and restaurants and get a real feel for where you're staying. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. To me, that's much more how we prefer to travel. So
yeah. Well, we will definitely link to all of the resources you've talked about. Were there any others you wanted to mention to make sure that we send listeners to check out on your site?
I think I covered them all. I'll just send you the links and then we can put the URLs on the page.
Yeah. Well, before we close, I think I sent you these quick five questions. I started adding this back. I did this when I first started the podcast and then did away with them. And then we're bringing them back to just kind of end on a lighter note. Mm-hmm. And it's basically five quick questions to let people know a little bit more about a different side of you and that you just answer real quick. And so here are our quick five for this episode. I said the last one I recorded, I was like, I need some music or something to come in, you know, now for the quick five. So maybe we'll bring that in at some point. Mm-hmm. But just five questions for Stephanie. Here's the first one. If a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
I have to say Nicole Kidman because she's the only tall redhead I can think of.
Oh, and she's amazing. Now, this question, I'm wondering if I know the answer. I probably don't. It's, where is your favorite place to be?
I would just say generally hiking somewhere, like on a trail. I love to hike and walk and wander.
Oh, yeah. What's your favorite hike? I didn't put that in your notes, but
probably one of my favorites is actually to Camp Muir on Mount Rainier, which is Camp Muir is the base camp where you would stay overnight if you were summiting. And I haven't summited, but the hike itself is a day hike. It takes 5-ish hours to get up there.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Yeah, it sounds beautiful. Okay. Number three, what three words describe you best?
I would say active, loyal, and disciplined.
Oh, wow. That's very good. Okay. The next one is, what celebrity have you always wanted to meet and why, or if there is one?
I would like to meet Naomi Osaka. I really admire her as an athlete, but also she's just kind of a quiet, strong person. Uh-huh. And having lived in Japan and, you know, my husband is also half Japanese, so I would love to talk to her about her decision to, she had to choose whether she should be a U.S. citizen or a Japanese citizen.
Oh,
interesting.
Okay.
In how she chose.
That's cool. Maybe you will get to meet her someday.
I hope so.
And what is your all-time favorite book?
The first one that came to mind is Memoirs of a Geisha. That's
okay. That's good. So you definitely have a Japanese theme. That's really cool. Well, you did live there for 2.5 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I actually read that long before I'd ever been to Japan or thought about traveling to Japan. But it was very captivating.
That's really cool. Do you think you guys will end up living back there again? I know you'll probably visit for sure.
Yes. Well, my husband still has family there, so he has promised that we'll visit at least annually. And if it were up to him, we would actually move back there permanently.
Oh, that's really cool.
I'm hoping to live in Europe for a little while just because I've always wanted to, but maybe we'll end up back in Japan. It's a very nice place to live. It's really safe, which was not a factor we had considered so much in terms of what was important to us, but it's really relaxing being somewhere that safe.
All of my friends that have been stationed there love it. and want to mm-hmm. go back. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I definitely miss the food.
Yeah. That's really, I never did go to Japan. I've lived all over the world. My husband's been there many times through, you know, temporary duty, but I never did get to go there. So that's on my list too. Yes. Norway and Japan.
Well, as soon as Space A comes back, Japan becomes much more accessible.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out for sure. Well, before we close, is there anything else you wanted to add that I didn't ask you or that, you know, we didn't talk about today?
No, I think we covered everything. That was fun.
Oh, good. Well, I really appreciate all your tips. I think it kind of takes away some of the misconceptions perhaps about Space A, and maybe people, you know, military families will use that benefit more. That would be a great thing.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that people are inspired to try Space A or even just think about something else they can do after retirement besides just go straight back to work.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, and listeners, just remember, I will put all the links to the articles Stephanie referenced and probably some extras in the show notes. So go and check out the show notes for this episode. Take a look at her site, poppinsmoke.com, and you can find her on social media, and we will list all of those out. So thank you again, Stephanie, for coming on. I'm so thankful that you came on and shared your expertise and your stories.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was so much fun.
And hey, listeners, have a great week, and don't forget to check out the show notes.
Thanks for listening to the MilSpouse Matters podcast. Connect with me at MilSpouseMatters.com or on social media as @MilSpouseMatters. You can find my book, You Are Not Alone, Encouragement for the Heart of a Military Spouse, on Amazon and other booksellers. Love the show? Please leave a 5-star review in whatever podcast player you're listening, and then share it with someone else who could use it too. Until next time, have a great week.